welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls paper for Tuesday, February 23rd, 2021. I'm your reader, Mary Dove. We have a sunny 36 degree day out. Let the snow melt, I guess. All right, the front page of the Waterloo Courier. The top headline is Cedar Falls Acts to Remedy Worst Label. Members picked for task force to combat racial disparities. Journalist Amy Rivers, Cedar Falls. The first four members have joined a new task force seeking solutions to the metro area's dismal characterization of one of the worst places to be Black in America. Mayor Rob Green named Ward 5 Councilman Frank Dara and at-large Councilwoman Kelly Dunn to serve on the new task force. Human Rights Commission liaison Tony Babcock told the commission at its meeting Monday night. They'll be joined by Commission Chair Willie Barney and new commission member Melissa Heston, the group decided unanimously. I think there is a huge amount of work to be done, Heston said in putting forth her name for consideration. Barney noted he was eager to start that work as well. I consider myself to be an interpreter, a disruptor to the status quo. He said, I believe that I was placed on the earth to make everybody else uncomfortable. The four will meet with Green on Tuesday afternoon to discuss moving forward, Babcock said. The task force was created by the City Council on February 1st to provide direction to the Human Rights Commission by specifically targeting issues brought forth in the annual 24/7 Wall Street Report that analyzes U.S. Census data on discrepancy in housing, employment, income, and other factors between Black and white residents. The Waterloo-Cedar Falls metro area has ranked in the top five of the worst list for the last 3 years. Dunn and Dara have indicated their appetite for the work at council meetings in recent weeks. We must show our history of this town, Dunn said last week. Why does our city look totally different than the city right next door to us? And we need to recognize there's reasons for that. Dara also noted he didn't believe the task force should simply stop at 1 year of racial equality work, but said he thought the community should have ongoing conversations around these issues. The four initial members will choose between 8 and 10 others from the public to serve alongside them to craft a final report by this fall. Barney said those will likely be people from the school district, the Blackhawk County NAACP, and other organizations that could be of use in finding solutions. The intention is to have individuals and members of the task force who are in a position to broker resources and decision-making power that will affect the work of the task force, Barney said. Meetings are tentatively scheduled for 4 to 5:30 p.m., the second and fourth Wednesday of the month, though that could change pending on members' preference, Babcock noted. Our next article from the front page of the Courier, EPA flips ethanol waivers positions. Agency backs biofuel industry's court case. David Pitt, journalist from the Associated Press, Des Moines. The federal government announced Monday that it will support the ethanol industry in a lawsuit over biofuel waivers granted to oil refineries under President Donald Trump's administration. The Environmental Protection Agency said it is reversing course and will support a January 2020 decision by the Denver-based 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in a lawsuit filed by the Renewable Fuels Association and Farm Groups. The lawsuit is headed to arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court this spring. Federal law requires refineries to blend billions of gallons of biofuels in the nation's gasoline supply or buy credits from refineries that do the blending. Refineries can seek waivers if they can show that meeting the ethanol quota would create a financial hardship for their companies. The appeals court concluded the EPA improperly granted exemptions to refineries that didn't qualify. The court said that refineries should be granted waivers only as extensions, but most refineries seeking exemptions had not continuously received them year after year. The decision effectively limited the EPA's ability to grant most exemptions. Two refineries appealed the decision to the Supreme Court. Trump, whose polls show had overwhelming support among Midwestern farmers, had promised to back policies that helped agriculture. But this EPA approved sharp increases in the waivers, adding oil refineries and reducing demand for corn-based ethanol. Roughly 40% of the U.S. corn is used to produce ethanol. The EPA, under Trump, issued 85 retroactive small refinery exemptions from 2016 to 2018 compliance years, undercutting the renewable fuel volumes by a total of 4 billion gallons, according to the Renewable Fuels Association. Roughly a month after President Joe Biden took office, his EPA reversed the federal government's stand, saying the EPA agrees with the appeals court that the exemption was intended to operate as only a temporary measure. The change reflects the agency's considered assessment that the Tenth Circuit's reasoning better reflects the statutory text and structure, as well as Congress's intent in establishing the RFS program. The EPA said in a statement, "Biofuels and farm advocates applaud the decision. This announcement marks a giant step forward by the new administration to restore the integrity of the renewable fuel standard and honor the statutory intent of the program," said Renewable Fuels Association President Jeff Cooper. Iowa Republican politicians who were loyal supporters of Trump but struggled to defend his administration's ethanol policy also supported the Biden administration's move. "This is a step to provide much-needed certainty to ethanol and biodiesel producers," said Joni Ernst. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds called the decision an encouraging sign from Biden administration. Petroleum industry groups, the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers of America, and the American Petroleum Institute did not immediately respond to the message. Congratulations, Iowa farmers. All right. Our next top story from the front page of the Courier is U.S. tops 500,000 virus deaths. And it accompanies with a picture of President Joe Biden, First Lady Jill Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff bow their heads during a White House ceremony Monday to honor the 500,000 Americans who have died from COVID-19. The subcaption is "Biden holds ceremony, orders flags lowered as nation passes mark." Journalists Heather Hollingsworth and Tammy Weber, Associated Press. The COVID-19 death toll in the United States topped 500,000 Monday, a staggering number that all but matches the number of Americans killed in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam combined. The U.S. recorded an estimated 405,000 deaths in World War II, 58,000 in the Vietnam War, and 36,000 in the Korean War. President Joe Biden held a sunset moment of silence and a candle lighting ceremony at the White House and ordered American flags lowered at the federal buildings for the next 5 days. "We have to resist becoming numb to the sorrow," Biden said. "We have to resist viewing each life as a statistic or a blur." Monday's grim milestone, as recorded by Johns Hopkins University, comes as states redouble efforts to get the coronavirus vaccine into the arms after last week's winter weather closed clinics, slowed vaccine deliveries, and forced tens of thousands of people to miss their shots. Despite the rollout of vaccines, since mid-December, a closely watched model from the University of Washington projects more than 589,000 dead by June 1st. The U.S. toll is by far the highest reported in the world. accounting for 20% of nearly the 2.5 million coronavirus deaths globally, though the true number are thought to be significantly higher, in part because many cases were overlooked, especially early in the outbreak. The first known deaths for the virus in the U.S. were in early February of 2020. It took 4 months to reach the first 100,000. The toll hit 200,000 in September, 300,000 in December, and then just over a month to go from 300,000 to 400,000 deaths, and another month to climb from 400,000 to 500,000 deaths. Average daily deaths and cases have plummeted in the past few weeks. Virus deaths have fallen from more than 4,000 reported on some days in January to an average of fewer than 1,900 per day. But experts warn that dangerous variants could cause the trend to reverse itself, and some experts say not enough Americans have been inoculated yet for the vaccine to be making much of a difference. Instead, the drop-off in deaths and cases has been attributed to the passing of the holidays, the cold and bleak days of midwinter when people stay home, and better adherence to mask rules and social distancing. The White House said about a third of the roughly 6 million vaccine doses delayed by bad weather were delivered over the weekend, with the rest expected to be delivered by midweek, several days earlier than originally expected. White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Andy Slatoff on Monday attributed the improved timeline to all-out, round-the-clock effort over the weekend that included employees at vaccine distributors working night shifts to pack vaccines. More than 44 million Americans have received at least one dose of either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, and about 1.6 million per day receive either first or second dose over the past 7 days, according to the CDC. The nation's supply could expand significantly if health regulators approve a single-shot COVID-19 vaccine developed by the drug maker Johnson & Johnson. The company said it will be able to provide 20 million U.S. doses by the end of March, and it gets the green light and would have the capacity to provide 100 million vaccine doses to the U.S. by the end of June. All right. Good luck getting your vaccine, and so sorry for all of those who have lost loved ones to COVID. All right, let's turn to Cedar Valley news. A Touch of Glass. Waterloo artist melds science, art to create fused glass pieces. By journalist Melody Parker. Waterloo. Candia Deary keeps a stash of Band-Aids on her attic studio. Deary is a fused glass artist. No matter how careful she is, it's easy to get nicked or cut by glass. It happens so fast, like getting a paper cut. I used to be afraid, but I've gotten so used to working with glass that I don't think about it much. Some glass artists wear gloves, but I like to feel the glass in my hands, said Deary, owner of Blue Lily, Creations by Candia. Working with this medium requires respect. You have to learn how to handle it, and what to do. Her decorative and functional artwork includes jewelry, decorative plates, platters, bowls, vases, sun catchers, and other pieces that display a range of designs from whimsical bohemian and elegant art deco to organic, mosaic, and abstract influences. The Waterloo artist particularly loves making wind chimes with delicate hand-painted designs fused into the glass and experimenting with such techniques as slumping or draping glass over a mold and heating it until it slumps into the shape she desires. There are no deeper hidden meanings in the things I make. I just hope people will look at what I have created and it fills them with joy and happiness. She began creating fused glass art about a year and a half ago after stumbling across the art while sketching and researching ideas for creating mosaics using stone, tile, and glass. I immediately thought, this is a challenge, I'm going to do it, she said. As much science as art, the process uses the extreme heat of a kiln to fuse two or more glass pieces to form a single piece. Different types of glass melt at different temperatures measured in COE, or coefficient of expansion. Last spring, DeRee began selling her artwork at a booth at the Waterloo Urban Farmers Market and had her own pop-up shop in downtown Waterloo during the holidays. The artist also creates commission pieces. This spring, she will teach beginning fused glass classes at the Waterloo Center for the Arts. Participants will design earrings and matching pendants in a class that meets March 3rd and 10th. She'll teach a class on making sun catchers on April 18th. Waterloo Center for the Arts has purchased a glass kiln to make the classes possible. For more information on fused art classes and registration deadlines, go to www.waterloocenterforthearts.org. All right, here's an article about how to get vaccines. Greenwood Pharmacy offering COVID vaccine. 1,000 doses available for residents 65 and older this weekend, by journalist Sydney Krizen. Waterloo. Greenwood Pharmacy is offering residents 65 and older nearly 1,000 COVID-19 vaccines this weekend, the pharmacy owner said Monday. People can register for appointments on the pharmacy website, which began accepting sign-ups Monday morning. The vaccine will be given Saturday and Sunday at the Pavilion Building on the National Cattle Congress grounds. Parking will be available. People will need to be available to get their follow-up doses on March 20th or 21st, the pharmacy said. The next appointments could be the same location or another, like the Cedar Valley Sportsplex or Waterloo Center for the Arts, said pharmacy owner Bob Greenwood. Residents should bring a photo ID and Medicare card, Greenwood said. The vaccine will be free for anybody who signs up. The requirements will help Greenwood Pharmacy prevent people younger than 65 from getting vaccinated, he said. Two women in Florida recently dressed up as grannies to get their vaccines early, according to a health administrator. Greenwood Pharmacy said it will have 10 pharmacists giving vaccines and staffing help from the Blackhawk County Health Department. Greenwood said they plan to circulate people through the building to maintain social distancing. The National Cattle Congress should be a nice big space to do the vaccinations, he added. Anyone who has trouble signing up online or has questions about the vaccine can contact Greenwood Pharmacy at 319-234-6419. That number again, listeners, is 319-234-6419. Greenwood said the pharmacy will get the shipment of Pfizer vaccine from the federal government through its affiliation with the Community Pharmacy Enhanced Services Networks. It is an organization that allows pharmacies to collaborate on care and services, the website. Greenwood said Iowa pharmacies in CPESN will join Oklahoma and Kansas in being some of the organization's first partners to get federally allocated COVID-19 vaccines. The Waterloo Pharmacy joined the network when it began 3 years ago, Greenwood said. Greenwood Pharmacy already administered about 1,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine to local residents. Greenwood said this included Waterloo Fire Rescue, Waterloo Police Department, and funeral directors, school staff over 65, dental office staff, and Pathways Behavioral Services. All right, another news in the Cedar Valley. The headline reads, $1 million state grant to help fund career center expansions. The sub-headline is, Waterloo boards hold public hearing March 8th on plan to expand. Journalist is Andrew Wind, Waterloo. The Waterloo Career Center is getting some help from the state for a proposed expansion project expected to serve students from even more school districts. Board of Education members Monday formally accepted a $1 million Career Academy Incentive Fund grant from the Iowa Department of Education, which was announced last week. The $1 million would be used for future expansion of the Career Center. Jeff Frost, Waterloo Community Schools Executive Director of Professional and Technical Education, told the board. Located at the north end of the Central Middle School building, the Career Center now includes 18 technical programs where high school students can earn concurrent college credit. The board will hold a public hearing March 8th on plans to construct an addition that would increase program space and be finished by the fall of 2022. For the first year, it would house Central students as the middle school is completely renovated, opening as an expansion for the Career Center in August of 2023. A letter from the Department of Education said the project outlined by the Waterloo Schools qualifies as a Priority 1 proposal for the incentive fund. What we've started and where we're looking to expand is right on the mark, said Frost. A significant portion of that was to enhance the regional opportunities, said Superintendent Jane Lindemann. Currently, seven other school districts have agreements that allow their students to take courses at the Career Center. Those include Cedar Falls, Dyke New Hartford, Dunkerton, Hudson, Janesville, Jessup, and Union Community Schools. The programs are also open to three parochial high schools within the Waterloo School District. Lindemann said she had recently talked to officials from Appleton, Parkersburg, and Denver school districts about accessing the center as well. We applied for it back in June of 2020, Frost said of the grant. The district was passed over in the initial round, but was one of the three awardees this time and the first school district. Other recipients have been community colleges. He said Waterloo Schools received support for its application from Hawkeye Community College, the University of Northern Iowa, Gros Cedar Valley, and the contiguous school districts. Really, this is a collaborative effort, Frost added. The Career Center is moving from a 3-block to a 4-block schedule next week, allowing it to serve more students. It already has 1,800 enrollment requests from East, West, and Expo high schools for the coming year. That compares with 938 during this current year. The board also has an appearance before the State School Budget Review Committee to request $1.19 million in modified supplemental aid related to startup costs for the center over the past 4 years. Michael Collin, Chief Financial Officer, said the district is seeking the increased budget authority due to an unusual circumstance of beginning new programs between 2016 and 2020. The increased authority could be funded through the 2021-22 cash reserve property tax levy. This would basically cover the first year cost of the programs for which the district didn't have an outside source of funding. In other business, the board set a March 8th public hearing on 2021-2022 school district calendar. It would include a rolling start to the school year. Kindergarten, 1st, 6th, and 9th grades would start August 23rd. Grades 2, 3, 7, and 10 would start August 24th. And grades 4, 5, 8, 11, and 12 would start August 25th. Approved a $34,065 for the 21-22 School Resource Office Agreement with the City of Evansdale and Bunger Middle and Poynter Elementary Schools, a $912 or 3% increase from the current year. Other news in the Cedar Valley, former MMA competitor facing child porn charges. Journalist is Jeff Renounce. Parkersburg, a former Cedar Falls boxer and mixed martial arts fighter who has been awaiting trial on domestic violence charges, now faces child porn charges as well. A federal grand jury handed up the indictment Wednesday, charging Travis John Fulton, 43, recently of rural Parkersburg, with sexual exploitation of a child, possession of child pornography, and receipt of child pornography. The charges were unsealed Friday when Fulton made an initial appearance in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. He pleaded not guilty and was detained pending a further hearing. Trial was tentatively set for April. The charges allege Fulton attempted to entice a minor to engage in sexual conduct for the purpose of taking pictures with a Canon Power Shot camera in November, according to court records. He is also accused of possessing a data traveler flash drive with a child porn involving a child under the age of 12 between November 2018 and November 2020. Court records show Fulton is currently awaiting trial for willful injury and domestic assault charges in connection with a September 2019 incident in which he is accused of repeatedly punching a woman in the head and back in Waterloo and threatening to kill her if she talked to the police. The woman suffered injuries in her jaw, nose, and palate and was taken to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City for treatment, records state. The defendant is a self-proclaimed professional fighter with a 20-year career and the ability to do serious bodily injury with his hands. A police officer who investigated the case wrote in court records, Fulton and the woman were detained earlier this month for violating a restraining order after they were seen together at the Isle Casino Hotel, January 28. All right. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls paper called The Courier for Tuesday, February 23, 2021. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Jeremy Joseph J. Schmidt, October 17, 1946 to February 20, 2021. Jerome Joseph J. Schmidt, 74, of Waterloo, died Saturday, February 20th at Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center. He was born October 17, 1946 in Washington, Iowa, son of Jerome J. and Mercedes R. Black Schmidt. He married Ann L. Chamberlain on May 5, 1990 at St. Edward Catholic Church in Waterloo. He served our country honorably in the U.S. Army as a dog handler during the Vietnam War. He continued his military service as a member of the Honor Flight Committee. Jay was employed with John Deere for 30 years, retiring in 2006. He is survived by his wife, a son, Brady, and his wife, Mariah Robbins of Newburgh, Oregon, two daughters, Hope Schmidt of Round Rock, Texas, and Michelle Cargill of Austin, Texas, three grandchildren, Kennedy, Logan, and Anson, four sisters, Pat and spouse Charlie Swanson, Charity and spouse Ann Merced Schmidt, both of Hastings, Minnesota, Susan and spouse Kevin Rigdon of Missouri, Montana, and Faith and Joe Bratton of Potosh, Kentucky. He is preceded in death by his parents and a brother, Edward. Jay enjoyed nature and kept active outdoors by fishing and hunting. He loved sharing good times with his friend and buddies, but mostly he loved his family and pets. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 Thursday, February 25th at St. Edward Catholic Church at 1423 Kimball Avenue, Waterloo. There will be no visitation at the church prior to the funeral. Full military rites will be conducted by the American Legion Post 138 and the Veteran of Foreign Affairs Post 1623 and the Iowa Army Honor Guard. Public visitation will be from 4 to 7 Wednesday, February 24th at Hegarty Wyckoff Garup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway. Face mask and social distancing are required if attending either or both events. The Mass will be live streamed at www.stead.org by clicking on the YouTube icon. Memorials directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.hagertywyckoffgarup.com. Arthur Art J. White, 87, of Charles City, passed away on Saturday, February 20th, 2021. A private family funeral will be held on Thursday, February 25th, 2021, at First Baptist Church, with Pastor Matt Howlett officiating. Please join the family on the First Baptist Church Facebook page for a live stream at 10 a.m. Hauser Wyhouse Funeral Home, you may call at 641 828-2323. The address is 1205 South Main Street, Charles City, 50616, is in charge of local arrangements. Online condolences may be left on the tribute wall for the family at www.hauserfh.com. Lillian Irene Fisher, 103, of Shell Rock, died Tuesday, February 16, 2021, at the Shell Rock Health Care Center in Shell Rock. Lillian willed her body to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester for medical research. There will not be a formal service at this time. Any memorial contributions in Lillian's name may be directed to the Mayo Clinic. Online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is in charge of arrangements. You may call at 319-352-1187. Other Cedar Valley news. We have a Cedar Falls plow driver was arrested by journalist Jeff Renounci. Cedar Falls. A Cedar Falls snow plow driver has been arrested for allegedly plowing while intoxicated. Cedar Falls police arrested Thomas Norman Hallman, 50, Sunday night for operating while intoxicated after he allegedly failed field sobriety test and blew a .138 on a breath test, according to court records. Officers received information that Hallman had arrived for work intoxicated and was driving a road grader for snow removal. City employees had Hallman pulled over at Main and 21st Street shortly after 7 p.m., and officers arrived and administered a preliminary breath test. Hallman was released from jail pending trial. Here's an interesting headline. Conservation Workshop will focus on backyard habitats and rain gardens, by journalist Melody Parker. Waterloo. It just got a little bit easier to be green. Homeowners interested in conservation and saving a few bucks in and around their home by being more energy and resource efficient will find a one-stop shop at the annual Cedar Valley Community Conservation Workshop, said Josh Balk from the Blackhawk Soil and Water District. This year's free workshop is virtual, beginning at 6 p.m. Thursday. The program ends at 8:30 p.m. Pre-registration is required. We all have a role to play in the community. There are small steps that folks can take at home to have a positive impact on the community, and this workshop provides some of the tools and resources to make that happen, Balk explained. Offering the virtual workshop means that people can learn about conservation from the comfort of their couch with a warm cup of tea. Balk will focus on rain gardens and permeable pavement as options for home storm water management during the event. Other topics will include climate resiliency presented by Maria Perez and Thomas Weinstrat from the City of Cedar Falls, rainwater harvesting and city stormwater involvement from Sarah Kempen, City of Waterloo, and home energy efficiency from Shelby Weaver, Green Iowa Army Corps. Also, Gardening Initiatives, Good Neighbor Iowa, Leah Bothy, Green Iowa Army Corps, Backyard Wildlife Habitat, including Bat Boxes and Bee Hotels, Jordan Evans from Land and Water Stewards, Army Corps, Native Landscaping and Plant Selection, Laura Fisher-Walter from the Tallgrass Prairie Center, and Minimizing Waste and Backyard Composting, Tammy Turner from Waste Track Education Team. Steve Eilers, Iowa State Extension and Outreach Master Gardeners, will discuss sustainable gardens. We want to impact more people. Each year, we've seen a steady increase in attendance. Last year, we were able to have the workshop in person because it took place before the pandemic. It's taken a bit of different planning to make it virtual, and we're thankful for our partners. They've recognized the need to connect with the community and offer education to citizens, Balk said. Attendees of the virtual workshop can ask questions and talk with local experts. There will also be prize drawings. To pre-register, go to https zoom.us/... TJOSDOMPQDQ. Good luck trying to get pre-registered. That was a long address. All right, let's turn our attention to some sports news today. See what's going on in the Cedar Valley. State bowling. Headline reads, Eastburg wins 2A championship. We have a nice picture of the bowler. Waterloo East, Stephanie Berg, releases the ball down the lane Monday at Cadillac's XBC. Berg secured Class 2A individual state championship. The journalist is Jim Nelson. Trojan Senior opens with 267 en route to individual title. Waterloo. Stephanie Berg's first frame Monday was a clunker. The Waterloo East Senior was rock solid from that moment on, as Berg topped a field of 49 other girls to claim Class 2A individual state championship at Cadillac XBC. After recording an open first frame, Berg followed with 9 strikes in a row to open with a 267 game. She followed with 214 as her 481 two-game series bested Keokuk's Jamison Saunders by 10 pins for the title. Berg's victory gave East back-to-back individual state championships as Abigail Williams won last season. Despite the scores being posted in the back, Berg said her coaches shielded her from finding out she had won prior to the Trojans finishing the team portion of the competition. Then, sitting and holding hands with a pair of teammates, Berg listened on anxiously as the top 10 was announced. Knowing her score was a 481, she heard the numbers steadily climb to 467, and then the runner-up at 471, and announced a mass hug from her teammates, shrouded Berg. It was exhilarating. I was extremely happy. My first frame, I had a 9 and then a 0. I messed up, but I told myself to forget about it and keep working, and every single time I got a strike, I was backed up by my team, and it felt wonderful. Berg rolled a 393 series to finish 7th last year, and the jump to number 1 was possible because she enlisted and followed through with every bit of advice she got from East coaches Mike Weber and Travis Hone. When they told me to move or adjust, I listened. They helped me out in so many different ways that I kept fighting and doing what they told me to do. Weber said Berg's jump was because she was willing to take advice. She was solid all year long, in the top 2 or 3 averages all year, Weber said. It wasn't a lot of coaching, but when we did give her a tip, she applied it to her game, and that was all it took. She did an awesome job this year. Mallory Carey and Jersey Benson finished 11th and 12th, respectively, in the individual competition. Carey had a high of 224 to go with her 408 series, and Benson rolled games of 203 and 204 for a 407. East, also the defending 2A team champion, was second after the individual two-game series portion of the tournament with a score of 2,021, trailing eventual champion Lamar's by 8 pins. But the Trojans could not find the right touch in the 5-game Baker rotation as they finished 4th, with Keokuk and Western Dubuque pulling ahead of them for the 2nd and 3rd place trophies. The Trojans returned 4 of their top 6 bowlers in 2021-22. In Class 1A, Charles City, Brianna Ross was 12th with a 396. She had a high game of 211. Louisa Muscatine captured its 5th consecutive 1A title. Congratulations to all the bowlers. All right. Next in sports is a basketball article. The headline reads, Time Runs Out on East. We have a picture of Waterloo East Shakur Wright scores in front of Iowa City High's Jamaria Newsom during Class 4A sub-state opener Monday at the Fred J. Miller Gymnasium. Journalist Nick Petraeus. Waterloo, a last-ditch effort to extend the season, faded into an easy mistake to make for Waterloo East boys basketball team with the current socially distanced bench configuration. Trailing by just two with time winding down, a Trojan rejected an offensive rebound and spotted an open teammate out in the corner of his eye. Unfortunately for East, he wasn't in the game and was standing just beyond the corner sideline. Iowa City High prevailed 56-54 Monday night in the opening round of Class 4A postseason play. City High, 4-6, entered this contest with half as many games played as East, 5-14. The Little Hawks, however, showed poise every time the Trojans went on a run and the decibel level picked up within the enthusiastic home crowd. I think that they had all the built-in excuses if they wanted to fold and not deal with the adversity the way that we are, City High coach Brennan Schweitzer said. But we try to preach to our guys that everybody is dealing with what we've dealt with this year. At the end of the day, as long as we take care of what we practice every day, everything will take care of itself. We're a defensive-minded team that likes to get out and play in transition. I think that's where the difference was made tonight. We got lots of transition buckets, and we also had some guys getting second-chance opportunities. City High attacked the lanes to pick up extra looks on offense as East struggled to locate players on box out within its zone defense. I've been harping all year it's about boxing out, and we've done a lot in practice about boxing out. Each East coach, Brent Carmichael, said, "Sometimes when you're in an intense game, you resort back to what you know, as opposed to what you were taught. I think we resorted back to just trying to outjump people instead of boxing them out. It's the little things, and I hope that our younger guys understand now, for when the atmosphere is like this, it's the little things get you over the top. I think the little things got us tonight." City High's third-year starting point, Byron Benton, scored eighth of his team's high 17 points in the fourth quarter. His quickness off the dribble drew a pair of fouls that resulted in four consecutive three throws to take the lead after East went up 51-50 when Jamaris Bradford Gates worked screen for a corner three-pointer. City High now advances to face the number one ranked Cedar Falls at 7 p.m. Friday in Cedar Falls. After 9 games and just 28 practices, Schweitzer isn't going to complain about a chance for his team to play more basketball. "We're just happy to be playing. Anytime we can get in the gym, we're happy." Good luck to both teams. Wahawks roll in 4A opener is our next headline by sports contributor Rod Payne. Waterloo. Monday night was a near-perfect night for Waterloo West boys basketball coach Cliff Bernabos. Cedar Rapids, the Wahawks 10-7, came out a little apprehensive in their 4A sub-state first-round matchup with Cedar Rapids Jefferson. Cedar Rapids Jefferson grabbed a very short-lived 12-11 lead late in the first period, and it was the push West needed as it went on a clinic on the defensive end of the floor and shot lights out from that point on as it cruised to a 79-51 victory. "This game was all defense, and it was all about nothing else. Our guys came to life. Luke Fordyce, Sean Tuavis Wortham, and Armagh just shut them down underneath. It is something we expect from those seniors, and tonight they showed their leadership skills. It was about as close to a complete game as we have had all year. I'm just so proud of them," said Coach Bernabos. The five Wahawk shooters hit double digits with Kluhavacek leading the way with 17. Senior Shantavis Warhan came off the bench and dropped in 15 points for his team. "I just wanted to get in the game and contribute at both ends of the team," said Wortham. "We didn't want to hurry things and we just needed to stay calm. I think it was one of the more complete games we've put together in a while." Wortham picked off a pass and went coast to coast for the score, and the rout was on. The 6-1 guard knocked down a trio of threes as well. "This came down to the seniors taking control," said Coach. These seniors were so coachable, and I couldn't be more proud of them as I am now. The Wallhawks will play Cedar Rapids, Washington, Friday night in a rematch that West lost by 9 points. Good luck to both teams. All right, let's see what we've got time for. One more sports story. Here's one about UNI's football. Headline reads, Packers lure UNI's Mahaffey to the NFL. Offensive coordinator was Green Bay's LaFleur at Notre Dame, by journalist Jim Nelson. Cedar Falls. The timing wasn't perfect, but Northern Iowa head coach Mark Farley totally gets the decision. Just prior to the Panthers' opener last Friday against South Dakota State, it was released that offensive coordinator Ryan Mahaffey had accepted a job with the Green Bay Packers as an offensive assistant. Farley said he had been aware that Mahaffey had been linked to the Packers' job for a better part of 2 weeks. Mahaffey and the Green Bay head coach Matt LaFleur have past history with each other. Both LaFleur and Mahaffey were on the Notre Dame coaching staff in 2014 when LaFleur served as the Irish quarterback's coach and Mahaffey was an assistant grad. It was too good of an opportunity for him not to leave, Farley said. I know it was very hard for him to make that choice. The Packers coach, LaFleur, was tremendous in talking with me about it, being that we're in our season. He has concerns about our season and the timing of what was getting done. Everybody working together, everybody had Ryan Mahaffey's best interest in heart. Mahaffey returned to his alma mater for his third stint as in Friley's staff in 2019 after serving as tight end coach for Western Kentucky. Farley said he'd love to add somebody to his staff right now, but at the same time called it a double-edged sword because he doesn't want to cause any disruptions with his staff or program. I think we've got to be careful with who you bring into your circle, Farley said. Sean Watson, who Farley brought in last spring to work with quarterbacks, will take over as offensive quarterback. Watson has been offensive coordinator at Colorado, Louisville, and Nebraska during his long coaching career. Farley said he was going to check out Memorial Stadium in Waterloo to see if enough snow had melted and warmer temperatures forecasted this week. If Memorial is a no-go, Farley said UNI will be forced to practice on one of the UNI dome parking surfaces. Good luck to the Panthers in their football season. Well, readers, I think we're getting close to the end, and I'd like to finish up with the Call the Courier, my favorite part of the paper, and maybe it is yours too. Question, when are the next stimulus checks planned on being dispensed? Answer, Congress has not approved another round of COVID-19 relief. Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she hopes a package is passed by the end of the month. If it is, checks should go out by late March or early April. Question, can Nancy Pelosi be removed from office? Answer, the House and Senate can expel members with a two-thirds vote, as is laid out in Article 1 of the Constitution. Question, what is Mike Pence doing now? Answer, Pence and his wife Karen are currently living in Northern Virginia, where the former vice president has opened a transition office, according to the USA Today. Pence plans to return to his home state of Indiana this summer. Question, how much did Congress spend on trying to impeach Trump twice and the Mueller investigation? Answer, Robert Mueller's Russia probe cost nearly $32 million in total, according to the Justice Department. Roll Call estimates the first impeachment trial in January of 2020 cost $1.83 million. Another estimate from the Conservative Heritage Foundation put the price tag at $3.06 million, including the salaries of not only lawmakers, but 106 congressional staffers, all of whom would have been working anyway. The first Trump impeachment trial was much longer than the second. The Senate debated impeaching Trump for 2 weeks and 6 days in 2020, but only 5 days in 2021. So the second trial was presumably much cheaper. Question, the Waterloo Street Department isn't plowing my street. If they don't plow my street, I don't shovel my sidewalk. Can I be fined for this? Answer, If the city receives a complaint about your sidewalk not being cleared, a crew might be assigned to clear it and you will be billed. Question: is it legal to shovel your snow onto the sidewalk? No. The answer is no. If the city receives a complaint about your sidewalk not being cleared, a crew might be assigned to clear it and you will be billed. Question: why is Walgreens and CVS in charge of the vaccine distributions? They tell us to go online to schedule them, but most of our senior citizens don't have computers, so this method is not working. Answer: pharmacies have not been put in charge of vaccine distribution. The federal government is sending supplies of COVID-19 vaccines to 21 national drugstore chains and independent pharmacies to speed distribution. You can still get vaccinated through your health care provider. In the Cedar Valley, your health care provider, such as Mercy One or Unity Point, will contact you when you are eligible for the vaccine to schedule an appointment. People without health care providers can call the Blackhawk County Health Department at 319-292-2360 to schedule vaccine appointments. Question: in November, I paid $1.55 for a gallon of gas. Now it's $2.39. Why the large increase? Answer: gas prices are rising due to increased demand and not enough oil production. OPEC nations cut production over the last year in response to the pandemic, but now more people are driving again. The winter storm in Texas could boost prices in coming weeks as refineries are forced to close because of the weather. Calls are taken on a special courier phone. So if you want to call the courier, call 234-3566. Questions are answered by courier staff and staff at the Waterloo Public Library. Well, listeners, that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Falls Waterloo paper called The Courier for Tuesday, February 23rd. I'm your reader, Mary Dove. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
This is Jim Ralston, and I'm with IRIS, Short Take from the Iowa Curiosities. Farmers and their toys, Dyersville, Iowa. The wisdom on bumper stickers is true, and those with the most toys truly do win. Then the National Farm Toy Museum in Dyersville is a winner many times over, with two floors of more than 30,000 farm toys and exhibits, ranging from row after row of common tractors to combines, harvesters, and haulers, all the way down the extensive agricultural machinery lineup to an anhydrous ammonia tanker. The museum is a shrine and miniature to the heavy equipment Iowa farmers fuss over, endlessly fix, periodically live in during planting or harvesting, and tirelessly operate to bring home the grain or the beans that bring home the bacon. And don't let the word toy fool you. The only thing toy-like about these farm toys is that they are built to 1/16th or 1/32nd score. Scale, and don't have internal combustion engines. This is Iowa, after all. Farm machines aren't child's play, even when they're toys. Most of the toys are stunningly accurate, not to mention beautiful. Replicas of tractors or combines with particular makers like John Deere and Case, from particular years, with details accurate down to the windshield wipers. Children play with these toys not only to have fun, they got a vocational education and heavy equipment. Highlights of the museum include an exhibit explaining the notion of scale that features a full-size replica of a John Deere tractor accompanied by a row of successfully smaller scale models, from 1/2 scale all the way down to a realistically looking tractor you can carry in your pocket. Upstairs, look for more tractors and harvesters, enclosed in glass cases, more perhaps than you've ever hoped to see. And though the word toy does technically appear in this museum's name, don't expect much playing around. Tractors, trucks, trailers, and combines, even at 1/32nd or 1/64 scale, are way too wrapped up in Iowa's blood, sweat, and sorrow to be simple objects of play. Don't be surprised if you see some old-timer kicking the tires of a tiny Case combine, wondering how it would hold up harvesting more than 2,000 acres. Or some young, unquietly cussing pocket-sized John Deere because it won't turn over. The National Farm Toy Museum is at the intersection of US 20 and Iowa Highway 136 in Dyersville. Open daily from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., the museum also hosts a number of special events. Exhibits throughout the year, the largest of which is the granddaddy of all farm toy shows, held the first full weekend in November. For more information, call 563-875-2727 or visit www.nationalfarmtoymuseum.com. That was an excerpt from Iowa Curiosities, Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.